May we have the roll call?
Here. Councilmember Morgan?
Here.
Councilmember Edelman?
Here.
Councilmember Weber?
Here.
Councilmember Pepper?
So, Seth, I think we can just start at the beginning.
Thank you, Mayor. A couple introductory things. Again, tonight we're expecting to go through the proposed capital projects for the Water Department, Street Department, Sewer Department, and Stormwater. I'm assuming you've looked over these documents, and so I'm not going to read the entire thing here, but give some short introductory comments, and then I'll pause because the reason we're here is that to get your input and to get your comments, edits, additions, deletions. This is a policy document of the council. And then once we get through the projects and we've got your input, May has some summary financial information she'd like to go over at the end of the meeting. How does that sound?
Okay.
Very good. All right, let's turn to page 4. First project, we're starting with streets, is the general street improvements. I tried to use the highlighted colors consistent with what you've seen in the six-year TIP. So the light orange is light street maintenance project. Examples of what we've done in this category would be paving a short section of 132nd, Newcastle intersection repairs, major crack sealing effort, and then a major patching effort. Those are some of the previous year's bids that we've put out with these funds.
Hi, Morgan here. So I think this is a need, but I'm wondering, do we have any guesstimate of how much this helps save the roads and makes them last longer?
Like crack sealing tends to extend the life of a section of roadway 5 to 7 years. So, for instance, the cracks, we did some major crack sealing on 224th. Mm-hmm. It helps us in getting maintenance, in getting TIB preservation grants. They approve grants if you're doing a good job of maintenance. If you're letting your streets go, your grant application is scored lower. So the work that we did on 224th, we're in that, Greg Armstrong would say, we're in that sweet spot. It's needed, and we've done a good job of maintaining it. You'll see that project coming up here in a bit.
So there's a benefit for the grants. Is there, it costs something to do this patch seal.
Oh, sure.
So I'm kind of wondering about the financial prudence of doing that.
Oh, it's very cost effective.
So
because
very
reconstruction is like of grinding up, reconstructing the base,
mm-hmm.
Is maybe 4 or 5 times more expensive than just an overlay. Rather overlay the street than to total reconstruction.
Okay, so reconstruction 4 or 5 times compared to overlay?
As compared to just overlay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you have to reestablish the base, that's
right.
A lot more work.
Okay.
You lose
And you're going to crack seal 2 or 3 times maybe before you overlay, or?
Maybe, probably no more than twice. Another effective tool is chip seal. The problem that we found with chip seal is, although it's very effective, it's difficult to get a large enough project to where you can get some bid efficiency. A chip seal is usually about one third the cost of an overlay, and will preserve the street, say, 7 to 10 years. But it's if you're doing miles or a couple miles, then you can get some bid efficiency. If you're doing a very short section, which, you know, in our small town, it's hard to find a real long section of road that you would use chip seal. So anyway, we've explored maybe doing some things with our neighbors, but there's only if you've got curb and gutter, it's usually not too well accepted by the residents. So there's issues with it. I'm maybe only contemplating it on one street here in the city, and
we'll get there.
Something to think about. Okay, no changes to general street improvement? Okay. Mm-hmm. Roberts Drive improvement. This is a project that has grant funding and is in progress. And I'll be changing that highlight to the dark. This should be the dark orange to match what was in the TID. I'm not sure why it's gray.
So we're doing this now?
It's in progress. Remember, we've got 2 grants.
So I'm just wondering about I feel like this is an orphan road in the city. Like, it used to be a county road, and now it's in the city. And so is there ever any orphan road money from the county? And
You have to address that at annexation.
Okay, and we didn't, okay.
Yeah, so that was many, many years ago.
So that was, and that was many, many years ago. You're right about that. And then I'm still sort of thinking about this major haul route that they've made through town that's got all that truck traffic. There isn't any opportunities there, is there?
Opportunities for what?
For some kind of countywide, since it's a countywide major haul route. I mean, it's really, really basic.
You mean getting money from the county?
Yeah.
We
have a little bit, yeah.
It isn't our, we don't have any county money contributed to this project. It's all state money.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And it isn't arterial. It's the major east-west corridor road in the city, other than 288.
Mm-hmm.
It has a pretty robust pavement section. And so the road is constructed to handle truck traffic, and any repairs or repaving needs to expect truck traffic.
Right.
And be able to handle truck traffic.
Right. Okay.
Part of the problem is the concrete tends to be a little bit noisy with trucks because of the slight unevenness from
panel to panel.
Right. And so with this, we'll smooth that out with overlay.
Right.
So So it'll be much quieter.
Quieter for the neighbors. So that's one of the things I've actually already heard about. Another thing I was wondering, when this bridge goes over, is the belly of the drop going to get evened out a little bit?
Filled in, no.
And I was also, okay. And so then there won't be any accommodation needed for those driveways up there.
No, and these types of, these are, you're talking design level details.
Yeah, I know.
Which, and you'll see, and we don't cover that, those types of issues in this document.
Here, and we're not there yet, are we? So, but we are starting, so we have done some designing on it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're in the middle of design. All
okay.
kinds of detailed issues from
okay.
that we're dealing with, yes.
Okay. That's all I had on there.
The next project on the list is a capacity-adding project showing a north that the city, according to its future street network and the comprehensive plan, desires a north-south corridor in the western portion of the city, and that it would be required to be built by the developer.
Are you done? At the risk of being the one who's talking here, but this is my committee after all. I'm looking at this and I'm going, this is a really straight, how long is that straight stretch? Is that really that straight, or is this going to come out in the design that it'll be more contoured to the land or something?
Again, this is high-level design.
Okay.
And this is how I showed it, the way it's shown in the comprehensive plan. In actual design, yes, it curves. And the main intent is that we need a north-south corridor that connects from the Lake Sawyer Road down to the southwest corner of the property, before going west. So the developer needs to be sensitive to going around wetlands rather than through them and that type of thing. So, it will curve.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. That was sort
this
of...
This is major concept level of where we want roads, not design level detail.
Yeah. Because I'm going, so my next comment is something about how many intersections are there going to be along this Roberts Drive? And how close are they
along
together?
Roberts.
And I'm sort, you know, and like I'm kind of getting ahead of you, I think.
Okay, we'll come back to that. Lake Sawyer Road Extension is another capacity adding project providing linkage from the Lake Sawyer across Roberts Drive and then tying back into the annexation road.
Right.
Eventually, I don't think these roads will be actually named annexation road. We could probably be a little more creative than that, but we're just trying
to. It's maybe good for now. Huh?
It's trying to stay consistent with what other planning documents have shown. The next project is the 224th guardrail at Covington Creek. The council a few years back set aside REIT dollars for safety of guardrails along Abrams. The Public Works Committee at that time asked me to reassess and evaluate the risk benefit of that project. And at that time, they were saying, looked at other safety risks in the city and determined that there was a higher risk, better benefit-cost ratio to spending our safety dollars in this location, and that's why we've added that to the CIP.
Councilmember Edelman, and I just want to say, having driven on that road a lot and been at the scene of an accident, there is a guardrail that's needed right there. And it'll go, I assume this goes hand in hand with all the other things that are going on at Covington Creek, right?
Yes, these dollars could be added and implemented at the same time as the culvert replacement project. Yeah, he's at the scene of every accident, I think.
I've seen them too. I've seen two since the spring in the creek next to his house. So.
The next street's 224th. We talked about recently, and you can see the patching and crack sealing that we've done along this stretch of roadway. Had we not done that, the pavement condition would undoubtedly have become much worse and put us down below perhaps the funding level for grants. Right now we're looking pretty positive to be able to get a grant for this project. It's a bit larger than the typical pool of funds for preservation, so it may need to be phased. So we'll see what we can get, but more than likely, if we can get half of it, then it also makes it easier to get the other half the next year. The Roberts Roundabout capacity adding project. This is some type of mitigation here is required by the developer early on in their process, so it. To meet the initial capacity and safety issues, they're going to be putting in an interim signalized intersection in concert with Ravensdale. So this is the long-term plan. We show a roundabout here, but we really need to think about whether it's a roundabout or a signal. Although we may prefer a roundabout, we have to be pragmatic and practical about it because roundabouts can take up a lot of space. We've got creeks there. We've got the Tacoma pipeline. And slope issues. You can't tilt a roundabout too much, especially with truck traffic. There also is the issues that of the impacts upstream and downstream. Signals produce platoons of traffic where you can, and I know I'm getting into,
I'm interested. Tell me.
Into design level details, but platoons of traffic provide openings so that the people in the downtown area where there is many uncontrolled intersections and driveways would have an easier time turning left, turning right. If you get some little breaks in the traffic, right now it's hard to get a break to get out into the traffic and make your turns and get onto the street or off the street. So it may be beneficial and more functional for the city to consider signals. All I'm saying is we're being open-minded about it. I'm not going to, as your technical advisor, I'm not going to lock in on this until it's studied in depth.
Decision-making about things. Thank you.
Seth, this upper thing that looks like a big fat road that goes off to the, I'm just trying to orient myself a little bit, that goes off to the left from the main 169, is that what goes into the mine?
Off to the left?
Yeah, on the right picture off to the left, well, it's on both pictures, it's the same thing.
Is it going off to the, that's
is that
the pipeline road?
Yeah. That's pipeline road.
Mm-hmm. That's where the reason they call it Pipeline Road is that's where the Tacoma Pipeline is.
That's That's where the Tacoma pipeline is.
Right along that alignment.
Right along that alignment. And then, okay, and then in this left picture, the little, that's the pipeline, is it, that comes down?
No, we don't.
That comes from the bottom and comes up that little hairline thing?
I'm going to come over there.
Okay. No, I think this is the Lawson. This is the Lawson connector.
The pipeline, I think, follows that. The Tacoma pipeline follows
that.
Yeah,
so it's coming down here. Yeah. Somewhere like that. Okay.
But
this here is the airport, huh?
No.
No?
That.
It's hard to know.
No, the airport's over here.
The airport's over here.
It's more on this alignment.
And the pond is right here?
Yes. But another issue is this, to meet our slope requirements, where there's difficulty in meeting the slope requirements on that.
Yeah, and there's a lot of water on that hill.
That's why it's out.
Yeah, I get that.
It's going to need a lot more work.
Yeah.
No, exactly.
Yeah, we need it, but we're not ready yet.
All right. Next project is Roberts Drive Rehab, so this is... would be considered major maintenance, like an overlay. And in this sense, we already have sidewalk, curb, gutter, and shoulder widening on the east side of this stretch, and as well as dealt with the stormwater on that side. The panels are in reasonable condition in this stretch, but there are probably about 10%. 20% of them that need to be replaced, and then we would just grind the existing to make it smooth. So it's with this section would stay concrete, and but we'd improve the drivability and widen the shoulder on the north side.
And it's going to get blacktop overlay someday?
It could, but this does not propose that.
Okay.
So it would be nice to see the sidewalk continue on to the next housing development, from the library to the housing development.
Yes, that comes up in the next project, or in a future project. Any edits, deletions? All right, 232nd Avenue Southeast is a chip seal section. This is a stretch of road where there's no curb, no gutter, not many fronting homes. So this may be an area where it's a reasonable candidate for chip seal if we can do it in concert with maybe another agency. The base is in pretty good condition, and in other cities I've had good luck with chip seal, even if as badly allocated or broken up as this road is.
Mm-hmm.
You can see in this picture that there's quite a bit of fractures in the surface.
Question, Seth. This is Councilmember Edelman. How far up 232nd is it going? It's obviously going up the hill. Does it go past the Greenbrier entrance right up there on 232nd?
I think that red line is too far, because I think the existing overlay that we did under the general maintenance cuts off about 300 feet south of 293rd.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that red line goes too far.
Yeah, because it looks like that's probably what was done the last go-round when it ended up by Garvich's house.
Right.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
Unless you want to extend it another quarter of a mile. That would suit me just fine.
Oh, go to the end of the asphalt.
Because the deteriorating road, seriously, I mean,
it's
my street. But the thing is that whole entire road is – extremely deteriorated, especially on the edges of the road where it's basically crumbling.
I'm not sure if it was ever asphalted.
It wasn't. I think it was tarn
just,
rock or whatever
yes,
you
right.
call it technically.
Just a chip seal road.
More than that.
I think it was
done
before.
Oh, wow.
Like, I've been on that road since 92, and it's getting worse and worse.
Like, so maybe it was just before you moved there.
Maybe.
So maybe 26 years.
Yeah.
Buddy. Pepper, talking. So this red line would stop at 293rd place, or?
Near the
okay.
We'll have to adjust that.
Okay.
Because it'll basically stop where it came off.
Yeah. One, two, three.
The next project, a major street maintenance project, would be 216. This is a high traffic area. We've done maintenance on this. You can see the crack sealing and patching we've done in the area. So this would be going after TIB preservation money. Next.
Seth.
Basic, not to the light. There's a nice overlay that was done under that subdivision. That, so it pretty much stops at the overlay that was done,
signal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Kind of at that where it starts, that big corner starts.
Yeah. So and across the road there, that's Covington too, huh? Oh, unincorporated King County.
Yeah, right.
Oh, okay.
Project T11 is Lawson Street, major street maintenance. Looking at grinding and panel replacement and some widening, shoulder widening. So this would be a similar scope of work as that we were proposing on Roberts. And the next one is just setting aside funds earmarked for streets and to match future grants.
Hang me. So these setting aside these funds, where do they come from?
It's REIT one.
Okay. So this is REIT 2. And they are sequestered, REIT 2 sequestered till it's used, right?
Right.
Thank you.
This next project is a pedestrian project on Lawson Street, extending sidewalks from 6th Avenue up to and across the frontage of Lawson Hill Estates. Sidewalk one side on the and expected to be on the north side, continuation of our previous sidewalk project. Project T14, downtown pedestrian bicycle linkages. This is we're proposing a study. There's multiple routes that we could go, but we want to look at getting the pedestrians and the bicycles routed around the downtown core because of the difficulty of widening the right-of-way through the downtown area.
So is this superfluous to or next to, or does it eventually become a part of this studying of the new parks and trails, and, you know, that's that 20 that outdated in 2013 and open space? How does that fit in with that?
It could. I mean, if you're, because you have different pots of money you can go
right.
to for trails. So trails, would you could use park money for trails.
Yeah.
But we need to update our park plan in order to
yeah.
get any park funding.
Right. Well, we need to do that anyway.
Yeah, and I think that was included in the last in the park plan.
I think it was. I think it was. And, you know, my feeling, I mean, I don't mind saying that right here. If you don't have a plan, you don't get where you're going. I think that we need to consider doing that before we do other projects in that park plan.
Yeah, it's.
I mean,
I think
just,
it's proposed.
I just think that's long needs to be where we, the direction that we want to go. Because otherwise, you wind up making mistakes that then you have to go back and correct.
It's proposed to be park plan update 2018-2019. So not next year, but the following to get going on. And that's primarily a staffing issue. There's nothing stopping us or reason we couldn't do it now. I mean, it's out. The park plan right now is outdated, no longer certified by RCO. There is just no way.
3 years.
There's enough people to do it.
Okay.
And we haven't had that good of luck when you totally farm out planning to a consultant. I haven't found that it works that well. It needs to be closely managed by in-house staff.
Well, and I mean, I will actually supplement you on that, in that the parks and the trails and that part of the city winds up being so much of the character of the city. It's just, it's not something that any cities really give up some other entity to do it for them, because they're just never never satisfactory sort of a thing. So they could probably do a study and come up with something wonderful, kind of like a few of those others that we've had that then have nothing to do with the basic stuff we have here going on in our city. And so part of it is this business about how you integrate, or you need to expand your road by making a trail somewhere off the road.
Pepper here. I wonder, is this bicycle linkage study, is it too early to think that there would be maps? Would there be maps at some point kind of pointing out what we would want our goal might be in terms of?
Well,
does it go in phases?
Well, you know, there's probably three or four main routes that you could bypass downtown. There, you could put it on 4th Street. You could put it down 2nd Street. 2nd Street to Railroad. You could go 1st Street to Railroad, or you could do Railroad Avenue, Jones Lake all the way through. Each of them have different issues and impacts the neighbors and crossing of traffic issues. So, and maybe it's an east bypass, and maybe it's better to have an east bypass and a west. But I think it's better that we have a study, public hearings, everybody has a chance to say, I like this route, don't like that route, here's why, and make a decision as to. Once we get through that, then we need this public support before we go after the grants.
Mm-hmm.
So just on the bicycle part, I think it's a great idea for the city of Black Diamond to look into this, because we do have a lot of bicyclists that come through the city that always end up at the bakery and that always are blogging about, you know, that they're coming from Mount Rainier and they're ending at the bakery. So it's good PR for us as well to do something like this. I think a study is perfect and open to the public to comment. I also think, you know, it is an opportunity to get less cars on the street. So you have a better route for residents and for people in Enumclaw, wherever they're coming from, to have an area that's safe to ride through Black Diamond. So I'm for it. So I think that, you know, once we get to where we find somebody to do a study and we get public opinion and all that going, I think it'll benefit us.
Councilmember Edelman, something else, too, that we need to be paying attention to is not only are we thinking about what are we going to do in 2017, but this in particular, we're looking at 2021. This is to get it on our radar, but we don't have to make any big decisions for right now. And I think that's kind of an important thing to keep in mind.
And this is, I picked these dates. You can move things around on this plan, too. And when you get to the end, May shows you what we have in REIT dollars. This is proposed to be for a pedestrian grant, but it could be other types of grants, too. This doesn't use much REIT dollars. So, there's potentially could be moved up. So, but that's where I put it in.
So Seth, do you think that getting grants for this project is pretty good and soon or within the next couple of years? Because, you know, I know the mayor of Seattle was just on TV today discussing how important bicycle lanes are and everything and how important it is for cities to get on board. So do you think that this, I mean, if grants come up, obviously you're gonna mention to the council and say, you know, hey, there's a good grant coming up that could help us with this.
Right, and part of there's a limit to what staff can do. So it's already pretty heavily loaded here on the first couple of years. So we probably could get a grant sooner, but it's a matter of prioritization, and you guys are setting priority. The next project, T15, is a Lawson connector, providing a new connection from the east portion of town down to State Route 169. This really would not move forward unless the Lawson Hills project moves forward, but in case it did, we put it on.
So, Seth, that's kind of, I said, is this date really realistic? But we don't know because it's the Lawson Hill project, right?
Right, and it's probably not realistic because we haven't heard anything, and I could move that out to put out 2020. That's fine. If you want to, you want to move it to 2020? Or just leave where it's at, or what? Okay. Yeah. Okay. T16 is, this was the, when I arrived in 2008, then the city's street network was, there was some strange connections that routed cars where really they didn't want to go, and and disconnects. And then one of the issues is we had six streets coming together at one location where there was two creeks, which is would cause all kinds of problems. So when we redid the street network in 2000, late 2008, 2009, we showed a separation between Ravensdale and Pipeline Road, shifting that to the north. And so that's what this project is showing, a relocated intersection further to the north.
Pepper here talking. Which one is this on the tip? I see. It isn't. It's cut off, but is it because its name? This name here, where does it fall? All right, thank you.
This is the interim intersection improvement. This one is if it's a roundabout. Just relocating the intersection.
It must.
I put $1 million on that.
Okay, so it's this one. This one says 219 though, so it must be. Ravensdale 169 interim intersection improvements. That's this one. Yes. Okay. 2019, and. 700,000 on this one. Okay.
Yeah, this inner, it says, yeah, interim.
Yeah.
Intersection improvement.
I got it. Okay.
This is not the one that, the interim does not propose moving the roadway. So I'm sorry, I presented that incorrect. The interim project is just to signalize Ravensdale in concert with Roberts. And they have to operate, because they're close together, they need to operate together.
Okay.
Thank you for that clarification.
Is it Edelman? I just want to make a clarification for Councilmember Pepper, because the actual dollars that we're talking about for the total is 1.3 million. So the design engineering is 200,000 for 2017. Management and administration is 100,000 for 2018. Then the actual construction cost is a million.
Right. And I was just looking at the 2019 timeline.
Right. And this is something that the developer pays 100%.
But are you concerned that the dollars don't match?
No, she just said that you had.
All
I was trying to do is match the project to the.
Right. Okay.
I'm not.
And they don't. You know, at this time I had it. I increased it, the dollar amount, but it doesn't. It really doesn't matter. Whatever it costs, they're building it. It doesn't matter what my numbers say.
So, Councilmember Deedy, like Councilmember Edelman stated, you know, it's 100% funded by the developer, but the reason it's on here also is that it's a deficiency that the city has of getting out onto 169, and that it's not really safe. It's a safety issue trying to get on 169 from any of those roads. So we do go out for good faith to get grants to help us. So maybe Seth, you could talk a little bit.
Well, also another reason we put these capacity adding projects on here is if we are identifying projects that may need to be implemented within 6 years, say robust growth did occur, then they're on our list. If there's other development that breaks loose other than MPD development, we have it on our plan and have a mechanism to collect dollars on it.
Right. As if there's a bunch more housing, which is happening in Enumclaw, and a lot more people coming through our town from every dang direction.
Yeah, and typically the only place I have ever seen where one city would pay mitigation to another city was here. I've never seen it done other places. Right, but typically I haven't seen that done.
So,
but not saying it couldn't be done, but you would have to engage in the Enumclaw's development process and try and exact money out of development in Enumclaw. And that's, well, it's hard,
yeah,
it's usually not good with relations.
Right, it's another wrinkle.
This Ravensdale Robert Drive, the two intersections, that doesn't really help any with the cost of T7, though, does it?
It would if it was relocated in this interim phase. I doubt that can happen because you've got to buy a significant amount of right of way and at that time.
Okay.
If it's relocated, yes, it would benefit the long term project as well.
Okay.
T17 is the north south connector. Providing an alternate north-south corridor connecting State Route 169. Remember that initially the entire link will be put in phases as the project development projects progress.
Seth, that brings another thought to my head. Dang it. I'm thinking the Rock Creek Bridge, how long is that when we do the work on there, how long are we expecting it to be out of commission on Roberts Drive?
I don't know yet.
Okay, because I'm looking at this and I'm going, this would bypass it. This would bypass that.
Yeah,
quite
the,
nicely.
The Rock Creek Bridge project's coming next summer. There's no way this would be in by then.
Okay.
Any detours would have to be along 288 for the Rock Creek Bridge.
That's very true.
T18 is initially the new road connecting to Roberts Drive to the south would be an unsignalized intersection, but at some point then a roundabout would need to be installed at that location. They may opt to just put it in at the start, but that's may not be needed in the initial phases.
Okay. So how far away would that roundabout be from the other one where that we're supposed to eventually maybe get or maybe not at the Rock Creek 169? I mean at the Roberts Drive 169.
Well, there's the closest roundabout would be at the annexation road. Turn to the next page.
Oh.
G20, that's going to be the closest roundabout.
Okay. Yeah, but I'm still looking at that Roberts Drive, and I'm looking at it because
both of these are on Roberts Drive.
I understand that, but I'm thinking about this other intersection and there being more road in between there, and I'm thinking about it in terms of cruising and racing.
Where are you talking?
I'm talking about way up here.
Oh.
And
that's a long ways.
Yeah, that'd be a good route to cruise and race on.
Well, that's...
And which is something that we need to think about.
That's an enforcement problem.
I understand that.
Well, I know.
You can kill him.
But it's the smoothness of the road, the sight distance, the narrowness. Those are things that affect speed more than the type of, whether it's signalized or it's a roundabout. People tend to slow down going through the roundabout and come back out of it and pick up to whatever speed they were going before. But I've never heard of anything that they increase speed.
Well, not in the roundabout, just that you go around this roundabout, down there and around that one, back and forth, cruise.
Oh, you mean back and forth type stuff?
Yeah, I mean cruising and racing. Yeah.
Right at this
high school down the road.
And
that out as a positive or a negative. I'm just saying it's something that we probably should put somewhere in our head.
Okay. All right. T19. Is the relocated, here's the relocated intersection further to the north. So it involves purchasing right of way and potentially a roundabout. But if it's a roundabout, ends up being a roundabout at Roberts, will probably be a roundabout here. If it's a signal at Roberts, it'll have to be a signal here. You can typically cannot locate roundabout and signals together because the platoons of traffic coming from the signals choke the roundabout and reduce its function. You need, well, if the traffic's somewhat spaced out, it works. The other thing is if there is too much traffic on one leg of a roundabout, it can also cause problems. So we haven't got to that decision point, but the thing that we have decided is that ultimately we want to look at an intersection further to the north. T20 is another roundabout on Roberts Road, and then an intersection improvement on 216-288. There may be some initial phases that could be done with just some channeling and left turn refuge lanes that might help that intersection. But we've got it on there.
So this page 25 and 26, page 25, the top, it shows all the street projects total $32,217,000 over 6 years. And then the bottom piece shows that $10.5 million of that is coming from some type of grant. And $21,228,000 are either developer or impact or SEPA, some kind of mitigation. And on the next page, REIT puts in about $600,000 over 6 years.
So I want to, if you look at the grant-funded projects there, these are your maintenance projects, and if you compare that to the six-year TIF, the six-year TIF is... Remember, this year we put in So you would get an idea of how many streets there are out there that need work. And we put basically all of them in there that need work. Realistically, we aren't going to be able to get that many grants. So we put in basically a maintenance project or two a year here. So there, this is more realistic financially than the six-year TIP. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Moving on. 4.3, W1, we're moving to water. This very large water tank was built now 10 years ago. You can see the picture when it was new compared to the picture now. The streaks that we're getting, the lichens and fungi and algae growing on it, those create little micro environments underneath
fissures.
Those lichens,
yep.
And that start eating away at the paint. To repaint this, you know, is going to be $300,000, $400,000. So if it is a good idea to if we can to spend the money and get this cleaned up. Perhaps there's some waxes or some other additives that we can put on there to reduce the attack by the environment. But we put it in the CIP funded by rates. If you take good care of them indefinitely. Yes. But every 20 to 30 years, you're going to have to repaint. And so that's going to cost $300,000. If you're going to reconstruct this, you know, say then you're looking at maybe 50 cents a gallon, so maybe $2 to $3 million to rebuild it.
Now.
Pepper talking.
Yes.
Councilmember D, I look at it as like when you build a house and you put a roof on, every 20 to 30 years, depending upon what kind of roof you buy, you replace it every 20 to 30 years. You're not going to tear down 20 years. So you're not going to tear down your house and rebuild another one because your roof went bad. So you're just going to maintain the inside of these tanks and keep that cost down for the citizens.
W2 is the spring transmission reconstruction. Estimated about $2.5 million.
What's the project?
Yes.
Or by the what's the group?
W3 is the completion and wrap up of the water system comprehensive. I need, at this point, we're getting closer to completing this, but I need some time availability to wrap this up. So with CIP and low-impact development and the budget and adopting the new codes, stormwater reports, my list, and the school, not possible right now. This next project is project we've was on the past CIP, and we have a power, a water right for generating an energy water right, as well as a public water right. This proposes to increase that and take the water to across the existing bridge, generate green power. It would reduce erosion and landslides into the Green River, and then we would have clean, cold, fresh water discharged on the deposition side of the river where there isn't threat of landslides, where there is a flat level area where you could make an ideal, excellent salmon spawning ground with that water. So potentially that might be something that either some environmental agency, the Muckleshoots, or someone might want to partner with us on a project like that. There's grants available for this type of mitigation and green energy type projects. Yes, is it? It would, if we produce electricity, it would generate power that could offset water rates. Well, we did. Yeah, and it depends how much water. There's a lot of water there. And it depends how much. If we had environmental group support, we could probably get the water right, because it's non-consumptive use. It's not. So rather than eroding down a steep channel and washing silt into the stream, it goes into a pipe, and it's generated, taking energy out, and then that water then is available to build a nice spawning ground. But I show the picture on the right to show this was, you know, we had that enormous million cubic yard landslide in 2006. This is a landslide that occurred probably in the 40s. We don't know exactly, but there, you got to see the pipe hanging down the side of this, and they put ladders up the bank to try and get up and down to do the work. So it's been an ongoing problem. W5 is an asbestos water main replacement project. CDBG has expressed interest in continued funding of asbestos replacement projects, so we're putting them back on there. Maybe we can get some more money. We deferred the $500,000 gallon water reservoir project. That was quite a rate impact to customers. We're showing it coming back to that decision point, go or stop again, coming up in 2018-2019. It's fine to maybe defer it again. If it looks like Lawson Hills is moving forward and that there's the potential for building a new tank at the ultimate higher elevation, that maybe we just leave this and get the full use out of it and abandon it 10, 15 years down the line. So right now it's a placeholder. We'll see and reevaluate in 2018.
How old was it?
It was built in the 80s, I think 84. So the coating has lasted very well. So it's already over 20 years. The most damage has been on the outside has been from kids throwing rocks at it. But Dan has been, whenever he sees a ding, has coated, recoated, painted it. But the inside, the walls seem to be in reasonable condition, but the floor base is, the paint is coming loose. So I think the interior, we thought it was the other way around, that the outside was in worse condition, but it's really the inside is in worse condition.
Pepper, asking a question. Are we aware of what the other tank is having maintenance done on a regular basis, and this one seems like it hasn't had maintenance on a regular basis. It's just lasted and lasted. I mean, do we know what maintenance has been done on this in the past? We don't have a record of that.
The spot treatments that Dan has done for the dings has been basically been the maintenance. At this point, it needs to be totally recoated. So you're looking at a $200,000 project.
It's not a very big.
So the last Public Works Committee, we looked at the issue of deferring because it was a significant impact to rates. Mm-hmm. Right now, we only have a few customers to spread cost out, and it would be a pretty big impact. I don't have that. W7 is to address fire flow and redundancy to the north area. We have we do not have good large main sizes that connect and completely loop the system to the north end. So there's the red sections are that little one in the middle is a 4-inch asbestos that needs to be upsized to like 12-inch. The lower straight stretch is 8-inch asbestos, which should be 12-inch. And then the red at the north end of the picture, there is no link. There's no pipe there. And that would provide, if we did all of the red, you would have double looping all the way through to Diamond Glen. Okay, May?
Okay. So in the water, it's almost $6 million for the project, and you can see the spring project is about half of that. A lot of that then will need to be raised, and that's why we tried to keep the dollar amount for 2-3 years. Either part, like the $65,000 shown in 2017, we probably have that much in our reserve for capital. But we don't have a lot in the future, and that's why we kept the amounts out down lower in its years until we have more customers, until we reevaluate these and decide, can we afford those? Do we have years? Do we have additional funds? We'll calculate more of that when we get into budget and we do that 6-year forecast for operating. And also, how many new customers we don't know how. The grant funding, we don't have as much grant funding as we do in the school. There is still some energy grants that you can do with family. And then there is also availability to do some public works loans. And usually those are 20-year loans. One that people can interest in. But they've been hard to come by because the state is robbing the public work trust money, and then there's no money there to loan. Money, there's some money there, so we have to also watch that too. And then the developer doing some of the funding, but most of these are funded by grants for that real estate project. And we try to keep the real impact as reasonable as we can. So that the so if you want to hand page the next few, they're just that one sewer section.
The pagination picks up again on like. On page 43 or 42?
42.
Pepper, here, I have a question about W7. The pipes are asbestos?
Some of them are.
What?
Asbestos concrete.
Okay. It's like not these pipes, these asbestos pipes, is it water going through them? Is not going to be for human consumption?
No, it is. Approved. It's approved by
it's just something I don't know. I hear asbestos and I don't have good connotations for that. So maybe you could educate me about that.
Okay, well, asbestos is hazardous, particularly if you're breathing it, right?
Yeah.
We run tests on our water system to see if the asbestos fibers are friable and coming loose off of the pipes and into the drinking water. We meet all testing requirements for asbestos from our water supply. That's part of the reason why we adjust the pH. Acidic water will tend to soften the concrete, and you get more friable, the asbestos pipe does not last as long. We raise the pH with sodium hydroxide, and the asbestos pipe is going to last longer. However, we are trying, and the only way we've been able to replace the asbestos pipe, we need to replace it. It's old pipe. It's substandard. When it fails catastrophically. And we can abandon it. We can legally abandon it in place.
How long does it take? I mean, how long does it take before you put in a parallel pipe?
It's a funding thing. The problem.
Oh, funding.
We don't. This council has not funded the water department. Rates are just barely covering operations. We have not been able to set aside funds to replace pipe in the 8 years I've been here. So, how long is it going to last? We're not funding depreciation. We're not funding the replacement of this pipe. Mm-hmm. If you're going to start replacing pipe, we've had the rate studies look. If we can get a little bit bigger, we have maintaining the same plant with more customers, the utility will get healthier, and then we can start to replace these pipes. Otherwise, you're going to look at, can we double the rates after we've already had 15%, 15%, 15% just to keep up with regulation? I don't think so. I don't think it's politically possible to double the rates on our current customer base.
Well,
so if we get bigger, eventually it looks like we'll be into a financially healthy position to where we'll be able to start replacing these pipes.
Thank you for talking about that. You remember, I think Seth will correct me, the council approved for the water replacement line on Railroad and Morgan. So that was an asbestos line, if you remember, when we okayed that. So they bypassed that line and laid down new piping. So, and Seth could talk a little bit more about that. But it also put in a bigger piping, too. I think that was a
12-inch,
yeah. So it also made better flow for the people downtown. But it also removed that asbestos pipe, not removed it from the ground, but removed our water flow from going in there. So they just ran another pipe alongside us. So that sounds exactly the same thing. So we just have already done it, a similar
places,
yeah.
We get a grant.
We did. Right. We replaced asbestos pipes on Fifth Avenue from Lawson Street down to Pacific Street.
Mm-hmm.
With
the
CDBG grant, we've replaced asbestos pipe on Morgan Street from the Crown out to Roberts Drive on a CDBG grant. And then also on Baker Street this last year. So there is some possibility of continuing to get grants from CDBG. They are administratively cumbersome. It takes a lot of staff time to work with that program. It's federal dollars, and it's a very hard way and it's very staff intensive to get that work done. But it's the only way we have of financing these replacement projects right now.
And as we did, when we had the rate study, we showed what number of citizens, then if we have more customers have that pot of money, then we grow just with our existing rates, and we did start providing some funds, then start beginning to work on the larger projects.
Thank you.
Okay, sewer. S1 is a new project. Right now, we do not have a place for the staff to suit up, change clothes, get out of wet clothes, get out of contaminated clothes, have a place where they can get put on their safety gear out of the rain, and, other than the shop. So this would be a typical facility that you would see in, not necessarily that we have a washer and dryer, but a shower and locker area for maintenance staff. I put most of the burden, of, you can see, in the sewer fund, because typically that's the area of highest need. If you're getting contaminated with biohazard and need to get cleaned up, so I put a higher funding element in sewer for that.
Restroom.
There's an old office space. Next, it's inside that shop building.
Oh, in the shop building. Okay.
In the shop building. And okay. It's about 10 by 15, I think. But it's not very big. And I'm not sure. I'm not very good at estimating this type of thing. This may be high. I'm not sure.
There's a wash rack and stuff for trucks and stuff over there, too. Is it there?
Yes.
So there's already kind of plumbing and all that jazz.
Well, yeah, we've got water, but that's the wash rack is outside.
I understand that.
Yeah, okay.
I understand. I'm just getting a ball in my mind about how permanent it is and how much it's going to be of value in the future.
Okay. S2 is being a good steward of our sewer infrastructure. And this is just, it's a maintenance program, but the idea is to keep groundwater and surface water out of the sewer system, preserving the capacity within our existing system, meeting obligations to King County and Sioux Creek, who are downstream of us. And we've had pretty good results from the efforts over the years. And we have not, this used to be funded at $30,000 a year, and a couple years ago we reduced it to $25,000 because we were having good results and we weren't needing to spend the full $30,000. S3 is major maintenance on a connecting gravity sewer lane to sewer line between Morgan, Morgan Creek subdivision and the mobile home park. There's some sections in there that were not laid level or settled or something, where the they have big bellies in the sewer. And what happens, the sewage slows down. When it slows down, the fats, oils, and greases tend to coagulate and float and then stick to the sides of the pipe. And as the hardening of the arteries occurs, that and those that section has been a maintenance problem that we have to regularly keep an eye on this. And so and we've had, sometimes it'll surprise us and happen very quickly, and we have had one sewer overflow in this area because of that. So we're materials handling facility. I think this is showing a picture of a, I think the city of Fife's street waste building. So they dewater it, and it reduces their dumping fees because you pay by the ton, and once it dries out, you can save quite a bit of money. But the other reason for putting a roof over it is the leachate coming out of heavily heavily contaminated material. The best management practice would be to either connect it to sewer, but the main idea, if you want to reduce that, is to cover it. Yes. Right. Yeah. Thank you. We have, there's also, we need room for storage of sand and gravel, organic wood chips. We have trees we've got to remove or pick up out of the street, limbs. And it just takes room to do that. We'll be turning back the lagoon property to Palmer Coke and Coal, and we'll need a place for all of these materials and dealing and handling it.
Pepper, with a question. When the city turns back the sewer lagoon to Palmer Coking Coal, as per the purchase and sale agreement, so.
In the early 1980s, you wanted one more,
yeah,
back, more background.
Like, well, yeah, like
what,
does
what does
that mean?
In the early 1980s, the city got a grant to put in sewers and build a sewer plant.
Oh.
Palmer Coke and Coal, because they were a big landowner, this was an obvious place to put it. It was a low area, and that would gravity near. Well, they still had to pump to the treatment plant, and he sold it to the city at below market value. Provided that if the city ever ceased to use it as a sewer plant, that it would, he could buy it back for what we bought it for.
Okay.
That was part of the agreement.
Okay.
S5 is the Morganville force main reroute.
Hold on. So this is Councilor
empty. So when you, in here, when you say when the city turns back, could you say when the city sells back the sewer lagoon? I mean, it just looks like we're just giving it back.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fine. Thank you. The Morganville Force Main Reroute is a project that's been on the CIP. And if we can pump directly to the King County facilities downstream of Lawson Hill Pump Station, that would provide more capacity in the pump station. If our success in infiltration and inflow continues, then and we can reduce our inflow and infiltration further, you know, that then perhaps that reduces the urgency or the priority of this project, and maybe you could defer it a little more.
So on this one here, since you don't have enough room to double space between a paragraph, maybe you should indent those paragraphs so it's easier to know where the paragraphs are.
Okay. The equipment replacement program is we listed under sewer because it's a little shorter, but this is contributed to from all of the utilities as well as Parks and Cemetery. We haven't adjusted the contribution, but it looks like for the fleet that we currently have that this amount of is still sufficient to replace the equipment. Now, even though we've added to the fleet, we've added to a back trailer, we've added an additional vehicle, but it still looks okay. I think, you know, we were getting, you know, the back trailer was purchased with a grant. We're getting pretty good longevity out of our vehicles. Not just with good maintenance, so it's. I think it's still fine with at this funding level. Well, I think it's actually been longer than that.
Yeah, several since I've been here. And then you can see that. The sewer capital project summary, the sewer projects are much less, $6.35 a loan, a grant, use some of our reserves because we do have community reserves available, and mainly that's the infiltration and inflow. And then part of that.
Councilmember Weber, you talked about the selling back of the lagoon back to Palmer. So where does that money go once you sell it back? Was it? Do we know it was it sewer or? Okay, so is that something that could be included as a funding source for the summary?
Yeah, for any one of these, we haven't done it yet, but when we go to sell it and I get the price for that, we can add that back in as revenue to go back into the sewer reserve or into one of these sewer projects.
Okay, thank you.
On the stormwater? Okay. Lawson Hill Estate Storm Pond, this is at the very downhill side. This is a very deep pond with steep sides. The access is very difficult. This was budgeted previously at, I think, $60,000 to build a new access to be able to get equipment down in and back out to get to clean it out. We have no way of really getting it down in there and back out. With our experience of what we did at the sewer lagoon, which is also very steep sides, and we hired a contractor with two excavators, and he was able to very efficiently clean the organic material out and get it up the bank. And we're thinking of doing the same thing here. We could save probably $40,000 by having a contractor deal with it that has the equipment that's able to handle it. Now that this is in a more dormant phase, the construction is over, we're thinking that the accumulation of sediment and a growth of organics in the bottom of this, it should be good for about 15 to 20 years. So rather than spend the money in trying to build the access, we'll just change this to a pond where we're hiring it done every 15 to 20 years to meet that maintenance requirement.
So, Councilmember Deedy, so I just have a quick question. Maybe you can help me with it. So we had talked earlier at our work study on Tuesday about Lawson Hill Estates and that there's a homeowners association and that the land up there is owned by Palmer Cook and Cole, and their job is to maintain it. So when that was built, then did they deed this parcel to the city for maintenance? Or why is it not up to Palmer Cook and Cole, who owns Lawson Hill Estates, you know, the land up there? Why isn't it their job to at least help pay the cost? Or why is it solely on the city?
Well, good question. Typically, if it's public roads, that it's handling the public road runoff, then it's a public responsibility because it's public stormwater. For example, Diamond Ridge is a private road and therefore a private pond. The other ponds in Diamond Ridge, the city, or in Lawson Hill Estates, are also maintained by, although they're homeowner association owned property, they are city maintained stormwater facilities because it's city stormwater.
So the city owns the stormwater pond, or does Palmer Cook and Cole own that?
This pond is city owned. The other two in this subdivision are owned by the Homeowners Association because they double as recreational facilities. The next project, E2, is the replacement of the Covington Creek culverts, which we currently have a stormwater grant for the design of the replacement of these culverts with an open box culvert. And we're seeking additional funding. D3 is a water quality project to take the most polluted stormwater runoff that discharges directly into Ginder Creek and convey it south to city-owned property and treat it there before it discharges into Ginder Creek. So we have the property, we have the design, and we have $250,000 approximately of grant funding, but we need the balance. We're still searching for the balance of the funding for the construction.
construction. D4 is, there is a concrete head wall that parallels the south bank of Kinder Creek and reinforces the shoulder of Roberts Drive. And it's getting undermined and failing. Right now, we're trying to prop it up from the tipping over into the creek with reinforcing across the top of the creek. Another way maybe this could get funded is perhaps with a major street project.
Pepper, a question. Is this a salmon stream? Does the stream have salmon in it?
Yes, I think it used to, or maybe it did. And the salmon have really been decimated by the beaver activity in the Rock Creek Swamp. D5 is the Lawson Hills stormwater ponds. This is a new project. There's two ponds there that these were are owned by the Homeowners Association. They are joint use pocket parks for the neighborhood, as well as used for the city for stormwater. It makes it very difficult to maintain the ponds for stormwater, and it makes it difficult for them to maintain their facilities for parks. That they aren't really, because of the soil types, not that I wouldn't, that this isn't a good idea. Some places where you've got good soil, it can work. Right here, it does not work very well. So this is proposed putting in maybe some small vaults for primary treatment and then subsurface detention and then build it so they've got a nice, dry, easy to maintain surface for whatever they want to do on the surface. So this has not been broached to the Homeowners Association, but I know that from many comments over the years that this has been a frustration to them.
Councilmember D, so on this where it is a shared, you know, they would like a park out of it, a play area, and obviously we would like to have the flow of the stormwater going into a safe area to drain. I would like to see that both the Homeowners Association, Palmer Cook and Cole, and the city share the expense or work at somehow, you know, figuring out the cost of that.
This is Councilmember Edelman. And I agree, because just looking at this, it looks like the city is absorbing all the cost for this facility that we don't own.
Well, I wasn't proposing to rebuild the park.
Yeah.
Just provide them a dry, drained surface. If they want grass, if they want gravel, or whatever they want, chips and playground, that
would
take care
them.
Of that. This is proposed.
This
we're doing
this is still our obligation.
We're doing the
saying.
Stormwater work here to provide an easier to maintain, better functioning stormwater pond, and that where we aren't interfering with them, and they're not interfering with us.
And I don't think, you know, personally, it's, again, I'm looking at out years. So
yes,
there's plenty of time to negotiate with the Homeowners Association.
Yeah, and maybe there is some grant funds that this would fit well with. I don't know. It's something we could look into.
Question from Pepper. I'm wondering, with the building that we have coming, is there any way that this is like very expensive pocket park here, and stormwater facility seems like to me, and I wonder, is this dual usage going to continue in the future with new units being built? It seems like the homeowners are being given the very worst place for their kids to play or to have recreation. I'm looking at B5.
Well, these two ponds, I think the dollar cost is right. We could continue to try and maintain what we have. Realistically, though, that community does not have a functional place, neighborhood park for the people.
No,
I mean they cannot. It's not usable. So the city has standards on trying to provide parks for the citizens, but I don't see how we could meet that comprehensive plan goal of providing localized. It doesn't have to be public, but if this, in this case, it's a private park, so maybe you could use REIT dollars, park monies, to help the stormwater utility and help the local get to the point where they could rebuild the park. Stormwater is expensive. I think the stormwater, just the vault alone for the school is over $300,000. So that's.
So, Councilmember Dean, so if you used taxpayer money to upgrade a private park, then wouldn't you make it a public park?
Not necessarily. If you're using like RCO funds, I think yes. Or grant funds, I think it would have to be public. If you're using REIT dollars to support the stormwater utility, if this ends up being too much for the stormwater utility financially, perhaps you could use other city funds to lessen the impact of the stormwater utility.
This is Councilmember Weber. I can definitely attest to the the inaccessibility and poor quality of those two ponds. The first one, when you come into the neighborhood, spends a lot of time underwater, a good part of the year. And the other one has flooding. And I think that's partially a reason why it probably, not to speak for myself, maybe why some of the homeowners that are part of that association aren't, that play equipment and stuff has not been kept up. I know since I've been there, the 9 years I've been there. So it would be interesting to see how that pans out.
Well, maintenance of the recreation is part of the homeowners association mm-hmm. requirement.
Yep.
That's not a city function.
No, I didn't.
We maintain the hydraulics and the function of the stormwater utility. So we've got to keep the orifice and the discharge, and we scoop the sediment and stuff out of the initial phase of the initial cell of that first pond. But it's designed, that one is designed to the first cell to pond up. The way it was designed is that the secondary diversion, when it comes through the gravel, it comes to the next phase, is to divert around the ball court. That's not our function.
Yeah.
that's a homeowner's function to, if they want to keep the water going around their ball court, they've got to maintain that, the drainage around the court. Our function is that is that second cell is there just for stormwater attenuation, where it in large storms it will pond up and then go back down. In another storm it'll fill up and go back down. But it's going to leave silt and sediment on the ball court, which is slippery and slimy and probably not safe for a ball court. But that's kind of that's the incompatibility of having those, trying to do those two functions.
Yeah, and I understand. It was noted at one of our previous meetings or somewhere else that lesson learned from Austin Hills is why the Eagle Run or Eagle Creek is a lot better than, you know.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what happened to we had in our draft was the proposal to. Oh, that's in the park plan, not in the stormwater plan. Right. Okay. It's you probably already saw that other one, a conversion of the infiltration pond at Eagle Creek to more open space, public open space for recreation. I think it's the last one, replace the Diamond Glen storm pond. This is a small storm pond for a very small little subdivision. These facilities, the more small little facilities you have all over the city is a lot of, on a customer base, is a lot of expense per customer to maintain all of these tiny little ponds and fences and orifices and the vegetation and the damage from cottonwood trees, all of that stuff. So this is proposing to, whenever that North Triangle, if it ever develops, to negotiate with the developer, connect this discharge to a larger regional facility, make it a little bit bigger to accommodate this stormwater and maintain one facility rather than a big one and a small one. This is primarily funded by this, instead of having this eyesore in the subdivision, this could be a saleable lot. And then so it kind of finishes out the neighborhood, puts a new house in the neighborhood, perks up the neighborhood a bit, and would fund a lot of this work. Yes.
And would the city put a business on there so they could get some income?
I don't. It's zoned residential.
I actually know that word.
So the summary on page 48 then shows that the stormwater projects are $1,867,000, and the majority of those funded by grants. Stormwater funding, you know, we only have 10,000 in early years, and the 140 is way out in the future if we have that much by then. The sale of that land from Diamond Glen Storm Pond, and then a little bit of to do the commercial, a little bit of grant matching. So, you know, we try to keep the funding so that we make sure we have funding available. On page 49, that colored pie at the bottom shows, the blue shows most of the money in this is streets. Streets are very, very expensive. The next green piece, 14% is water, 77% streets, 5% storm, and 4% sewer. So they're smaller pieces of the pie. If you go to the next page, you'll see how all these public works projects are proposed to be funded. And again, developer impact fee, almost 58.9%. Some grants, the next biggest piece, and then very small little
Well, and also if the developer, or if we don't know what's going to happen with the development, if housing could tank, and if it if there is no growth in the next 5-10 years, then there isn't need for the project either.
Yeah, so they'll come off and we'll relook at this and say, well, we don't need those, we'll have to tighten our belts.
So it's not that they have to be done, they're only need to be done if the city grows.
So I also try to balance REIT funding. This is similar to REIT 1 that we already saw at the last meeting. I find at the bottom, I say how many existing property sales, like 87 homes normally sell during a year, about average of 280,000. Maybe we'll get 50 new. We have some lots, short class being developed, and others possibly out there, 50 next year. Then if you go to the top, you'll see how much revenue that brings in, 71, 775 from existing homes, and another 40 million from growth sales of new. You know, and then you can see that I expressed that out with new things. It's just kind of a ballpark. We can adjust that in the unit prices as we know how development needs for us. Try to do it modestly so that we not over budget, but be able to still put in.
But even at that, it looks healthier in those outer years.
Yeah, if you look at the colored line at the bottom there, you'll see way out in 2022, we have money left. We could actually move up or do more on some of the projects. If that really were to work, ideally, if like this, it won't happen smoothly. But it's a good way to forecast instead of projecting.
And next year, when we see what they really do build, we will probably change those.
Oh, absolutely.
So every year we have to update those. Yeah. But ever since the development's been here, we've been putting money into new housing that never been built. So
yeah, we knock it out. So that kind of the plan is that there's a public hearing on the 15th for a public input. We'll make a few little projects that we mentioned tonight. Also, we usually adopt this. Resolution because when we apply for a grant, they say what resolution number adopted your capital plan. Oh, that I see that's listed on your plan. So then you're more available, especially on like parks funds or street funds, to be able to get a grant. So it's important that we go ahead and adopt it by resolution. It's not a budget. It's just a plan. It can move up, move down. Some will be more. Some will be less. And we try to adopt or try to update it at least every other year, if not every year, depending on staff time.
Actually, last year was the only year
that we didn't. Yeah, that we didn't. Right. Mm-hmm. We have a ordinance in place for the capital plan that talks about the city's capital plan.
Is it an ordinance or a resolution?
It's a resolution.
Oh, okay.
And it also updates the annual. It's an annual supplement to the capital facility element of the comp plan. So as you adopt this, it becomes kind of an attachment to your comp plan. It's more current maybe than all your comp plan data. So it just kind of updates your capital projects in your comp plan as you do it each year. So I prepared a brief one-page resolution that could be adopted at the 15th council meeting if there's no changes to the plan. The 217 portion of that will come back during the budget and review those with you again to make sure those are ones we want to put in the budget. We may know something new by then. Oh, we have a new grant or the grant amount changed, or we're not going to put that one in there or something. But we'll try to pull the 217 projects to go into the budget when we adopt this year.
So, Councilmember Dee, so I actually have a couple things I'd like to add to this. So, one is a security fence. So, if you're over here at the public works area across from by the gym and by the bicycle park, I'd like to see a security fence around public works. They have all this equipment out there. They're also talking about on S4 to build a covered area to put this dirt under. which I could picture kids wanting to go play on and crawl around in. So I'd like to see a fence brought around all of this, you know, so the Public Works can decide where the fence needs to go and, you know, what kind of property, how much property they need to fence off. But it is, I think it is a safety issue. You know, we have kids out there playing. We have a lot of, you know, activities going on. So I'd like to see a fence added for safety onto our CIP here.
We could do a standalone project, or if we're upgrading facilities, maybe we could add it to S1. That would be adding it to early on, and maybe we can work on that budget and try and refine those numbers. So maybe we can talk with maybe a builder or have to take a look at them and see if there's. Hopefully, the things that we want to get done for a locker room and showers, that is maybe $30,000. Maybe we won't need to add too much more to this. So that's one option, is trying to address it with S1. The other is maybe put it in with this materials handling facility on S4. That would be out a few years, 2020.
So, Councilmember Deedy, I'd like to see it a little sooner, like 2017, 2018. You know, so my husband, you know, he rents out the gym for birthday parties, and, you know, a lot of that's during the summer, and you got kids that want to play outside, plus you got kids that are just riding down there and playing. So I'd like to see it sooner. I know I brought this up before, you know, in the past. I just think that it's time that we put this on this plan, that we look at the safety issues, and not just safety issues, but the liability mm-hmm. for the city. I mean, the equipment over there is just calling for little kids to come play on, and a lot of parents, you know, let their kids ride their bikes out there alone, so they're out there just playing and goofing around. So I just think that would be a huge benefit to the city and to the citizens to know that there's a safety net down there for their kids to play.
Because S4
right.
is not scheduled.
Yeah.
Right. So is there a general consensus that you would like me to add that amongst the council members here?
I think it's a great idea. I think it's necessary to do it. I don't think there's been a problem yet. So it may be a want rather than a need.
So, Councilmember Deedy, so there hasn't been an issue where there's been a liability brought to the city. But I have seen kids out there, and I have personally asked kids not to play around the equipment. So I do know that, you know, there's a little bit of concern for myself on that.
We have had a couple break-ins.
Well, that, Councilmember Deedy, and that's also a good point. You know, we have that equipment out there. We don't want anybody tampering with our vehicles that are out there that cost us a lot of money to have to replace or even maintain. I mean, we see the bill every time we see the finance, we see how much it costs to maintain our vehicles. So we certainly don't want anybody destroying our maintenance vehicles out there. So that's also a good point. So my other one is a little bit maybe way out there, but more parking down on Railroad. So maybe, you know, the city can look at different ways of maybe lowering the speed limit, I've talked to Seth a little bit about this. He talked about maybe putting in a new road, like a cobblestone or something like where if you're at a shopping area, you know that this is not just cars, but it's pedestrians down there. I do see a lot of people driving pretty fast through there. So it would be nice to get a little more parking, you know, take out some of those flower beds in there and get a couple more stalls put in. So I think it's, you know, out there in 2022, but I think it would be good to at least get it on here. And if we can get more parking down there, that would help businesses and help our economy as well.
Is that something that the council would be interested plugging in here at some point? There isn't much on-street parking other than, and I have heard complaints from Moon about parking availability for her restaurant.
Improved Railroad Avenue, and that's been complained about a lot. So it would really be nice to be able to reduce the speed limit and make it a more pedestrian-friendly area so that we could add some parking spots.
Also, the slopes in that area are fairly steep. You'll notice there is some large tracts that of commercial property that have not been developed as yet. And the city has a wide right-of-way to the east. They own about another 20 feet up on top of that high bench. Other issues that pertain to this idea is there was a commitment on the part of King County Housing to provide some parking and some space for parking. And although it's not in writing anywhere, maybe it's part of a condition of some, you know, whether they would still honor that a commitment that was many years ago, we could look into it. But there may be some options to increase parking in the area beyond just taking out the crosswalks and providing a shared parking facility or street and pedestrian crossing area.
As far as I'm concerned, this is fairly preliminary. We're still going to have a public hearing about it, right?
Right.
So would want to hear more.
But I think that it would be good to put it on there so that when the public hearing comes, they know what's on the what we're looking at and what we're talking about.
There's no problem with putting the stuff on
right there. Right, and that's what
I'm saying. We're still going to order it, and we're still going to decide what we're going to do this year.
Correct, Councilmember Deedy. Correct. So this is Councilmember Deedy. So I think that if you guys are willing to add these two on, then when it's time for the public hearing, people could say, well, I think that's ridiculous, or I don't agree with that, or you three or four could say, you know, no, I don't, I think that's a 2025 issue or whatever. But I think that it would be good to put it on now so the public knows that these issues are being looked at as well.
Councilmember Edelman, I think the thing to keep in mind with this is this, it's almost kind of like a wish list. The timing can be negotiated. The priorities get negotiated. There's nothing wrong with putting something in the CIP, and now maybe next year we decide, well, wow, maybe we don't want to do that. There's no harm, no foul if we add it in, right?
And we've had complaints from other people, too. You know, if the smoke shop, he's complained about, you know, not having enough parking, and when they bring – And, yeah, everybody kind of complains about not having enough parking, losing that parking when they upgraded that street. And so I think that, well, and even the Antique Mile.
Well, the Eagles complained because people park there.
But they're okay with it most of the time unless they have their own function.
I think, Pepper talking, I think I would really like to hear the discussion on this because I think we've all gone down there, and parking is—it's tight, even on a good day. You know, I have something I like to add. I think the gym is a gem here in Black Diamond, and I think that it should have a sign or a
something on the side of the building that's quite large that identifies it as the whatever. I talked to Tammy about this a little bit, and she's and there's apparently been some conversation over time about what to call the gym, and that maybe if we have if it comes out in a public hearing, people would have suggestions about that, because I don't know how much it would cost, but I don't think it would cost very much in relation to some of the things that are on here. So I just think I come from, if you have an asset, brand it. And I think that I think about the library, the King County Library, and I look at the way that sign is on the building, and I would really like to see something on the gym, on the side of the gym. There's
I think that's a really good idea, and so we just have to figure out where we would put that. Yeah.
Parks and Recreation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we would just have to put a big sign on it like they have on the library that says Black Diamond Gym.
Well, can I – this is Councilmember Edelman. The gym actually, I believe, does have a name, because when we took it over, it's was dedicated to Dorothy Botts, because she was the one that was instrumental in getting it to begin with. Isn't that true?
So, Councilmember Deedy, so in talking with Dorothy, it was dedicated, but not to Dorothy. She wanted her granddaughter's name on it, in her granddaughter's name. So it would have to be something where we'd go back to the community center and discuss that, or even just get a hold of Howard and Dorothy. I personally think that if it was going to be named after anybody, it should be named after Dorothy, because
mm-hmm.
Everybody knows
her. Or even just use her last name, Botts.
Botts.
The Botts Gym.
Yeah, yeah. So we, you know, I think it's great to add that on and add it into under the parks, you know, mm-hmm. for that. And I think that the city could look into talking with Howard and Dorothy about that issue.
In terms of execution, I went in to get a sign made last couple weeks, and I walked in the printing place, and there was our sign on the – there was our sign. You know how printing places have – they have got – yes, because maybe they printed that sign. But they do that kind of work, so it's very possible if the idea goes farther, we could get some bids about people coming to do things. Well, it wouldn't. Right.
Yeah.
So,
I think Councilmember Dee, I think just like the other two projects
to explore.
I mentioned, put it on there, and see what happens. You know. So.
Okay, we'll determine budgets and plop these in some appropriate spot and bring that back to you. One question on timing, and maybe this is for Brenda. Has this been posted for the public hearing already?
Yes, it has.
So these, we'll have to highlight these as changes from what people may have picked up.
That is correct.
From off of the website. So mm-hmm. we'll need to make a point of the changes that came out of this workshop.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks.
I move that we adjourn.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.